What you do is you gather your closest female friends that you do trust. Do you have any female friends that you trust?
Sure.
Okay, so say you have three. I mean, it could be 10, it could be 2. But say you have three female friends who you genuinely know have your best interest at heart. They have no issues with you. They're not competing or anything. I mean, they love you and they want you to have the best possible life. You bring that man into their company. You invite him over for dinner, they're there. You invite him to have tea. You just have them in the house. And just like we did with the men yesterday, we took four men and stood them up here, and you ladies saw that, you know, there were one or two votes for a few other men, but then every woman voted for one man, basically. Okay? So what you do is you just bring the guy in their company. It doesn't have to take more than a few seconds, really. A couple minutes is long enough, but I mean, a second is really enough. And then he leaves, and then you ask the ladies. If they say he's not trustable and you still love him, what that is your old childhood patterns finding the negative partners in your negative things in your parents and your partner and falling in love with them, which isn't real love, it's romantic attraction, and they'll end up killing your heart. So you, even though you feel like you love him, it's just falling in love. It's a romantic attachment to negative patterns, and so you must end that relationship or realize you're going to suffer and you need to go through the suffering for your own growth. If they say he's the one, you know, like he is God, I haven't seen a man with this much integrity in a long time. Fantastic. And you're going, well, then you have to practice through your doubt and feel their hearts and really give it everything you've got and find out what happens. Now, if they're not sure, which is actually pretty rare, usually women are very, very good at going, eh. They might not want to tell you that, but, you know, you have. If they're not sure, what you do is you put a time limit on it. Yeah. With these ladies. So you say,
do we let him know what we're doing?
That's up to you. You could or can't. It's up to you. But let's say you're willing to suffer 6 months with a man you don't know if he's the right one. Because you remember, you're occupying your life with him. You're getting older. Your life's passing. I mean, how much time do you want to spend with a man you're not sure if he's the one? So let's say you give it 6 months. Mm-hmm. What that means is you commit to yourself and these lady friends that you stay in the relationship for 6 months, even if you don't want to. And even if you want to stay in longer. And at the end of 6 months, that man comes back into that group of ladies. And they either feel that he's grown into a yes or not. If he hasn't, it's over. If he has, you continue. And I would do that for the rest of your life, even if you got married. Your women friends can feel whether this man's trustable. You will never be able to, because as we've just seen with all these questions, everyone's patterns gets in their way. So your closest friends have much clearer hearts on a man's integrity than you ever will for your man. You could do the same for them and their man. So that's a good way to tell.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Did you hear what I just said?
I totally heard what you said.
Okay, so what you're about to say is a totally different thing.
I'm not deflecting what you're saying at all.
It's a whole other thing.
The truth is, I guess I don't trust my friends to know.
Oh, well, that's...
Because I haven't trusted them in the past.
You haven't trusted your friends?
To know about men. Like, I presented...
Your men.
Yeah, right. I presented men that I knew there was something off, and they were so bedazzled by who they were, and I went, I know in here.
The women that are your best friends were like that?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Interesting choice of friends.
Mm-hmm.
To choose friends that you don't trust puts you in a kind of lonely situation, I'd imagine.
Mm. Well, I can't say I don't trust them in all areas. I don't trust them. I just think I've chosen friends that around men have the same patterns as me. Mm. So that it's not that I don't trust them with my love and my friendship, and I'm not lonely.
Then perhaps you should ask three women who aren't your friends. Just pick three strangers from this workshop who you feel voted properly and ask them. But there's no way for you to know, because you'll be bedazzled, as you say.
Yeah.
And what you need is to pick women who don't have an issue on the line with the guy or with you and have your interest at heart and can just feel the man. It has nothing to do with knowing the man. You could do it with the total strangers. We just saw with these four men. You just instantly can feel when a man's consciousness comes through the body. Now, I can guarantee you, where is he? Big white shirt. If you married him, you'd find out he was an asshole like all men and you'd have to deal with all of his stuff. But at least you could feel like the starting point is something to work with compared to, you know, someone else. So there's still stuff to work with, ongoingly. Just comes up, just keeps coming up. So that doesn't disqualify a relationship. It's just good to pick someone who you feel could go through it with you. So ask someone you trust. And if you don't trust your best friends, find people who aren't your best friends who you trust. And that's really the most direct way to get feedback on relationships. But I don't want to get into it now, but I'd be extremely suspicious that just by chance all your best friends happen to have the same blindness that you do. For that to occur is either a sabotage on your part of choosing women who will support your weakness, or you just don't trust them and something else is going on, but I don't think we need to get into it right now. Do some women here have any friends they trust?
Oh, I have some.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. In this area, in the area of feeling a man. No, in the area of knowing that they could feel a man's integrity at least as well as every woman in here could, because it was a pretty unanimous vote. I mean, that was a strong, you know. So if they're as good as the other.
I would say that all my male friends who have a feminine nature have all said how much they trust this man. You know, I mean, that's been that was the first dialogue I had. I did ask, and actually, interestingly enough, there was a group of three men at dinner. I said, okay, you met him. One of them knew them, two didn't. I said, what do you think?
How deep do you want to go with this?
Very. I really do. I'm so uncomfortable. I have not been this uncomfortable in fucking years.
Okay. Men, how, on a scale of 0 to 10, how resistant does she feel to opening to guidance? 0 is closed as a rock. 10 is the most open to guidance you could imagine. Raise your hand if it's 0 to 3. Raise your hand if it's 3 to 6. Well, that's half right there. 6 to 8. 9 or 10. Okay. So the majority of men in this moment feel that you're closed to masculine guidance. What that will do will be attract men who are not worth guiding. I mean, a man who has good guidance isn't going to want to waste it on someone who isn't open to it. So you'll attract men who actually aren't very good at guiding, because you much prefer to guide yourself. That's the evidence that you're doing in this moment, not your heart. That may not be true of, like we've been talking about. So in order to really even feel a man's heart necessitates trusting enough of what you're getting to feel its integrity in your heart rather than to think about it, which is just stuff. So to stay in the disposition of receptivity will allow men of more integrity to enter your life and also allow your heart to feel with more fine-tuning men of integrity. If you're in a third stage moment, you will meet a man and that will be that for the rest of your life, more or less, because you will only give yourself to a man of extreme integrity. Your history, I don't know the details of, but if you've chosen men who turn out not to be trustable, we could see why, since most men here don't feel that they're trusted, which would deflect men of who have good guidance from you towards women who are looking from a third stage place of going, I don't trust you, I don't trust you, I don't trust you, I don't trust you, ah. But there's no ah in your disposition a few moments ago. It was just So the man who's looking for his consciousness of integrity to be recognized and received would just walk right by you. Even if he was capable of loving you, touching your heart in the disposition that you were in, he would turn elsewhere. I would turn elsewhere. I would turn elsewhere. I wouldn't continue with you just to talk to you, because you weren't receiving a whole lot of it. Now, you might feel you were, because everyone feels different, but it's what counts is what, in this case, is what the men feel you doing. And so, you know, you're much more open right now. You could be much more open. You could be much more closed, but you're moving in the direction of, I can feel you feeling more now than you were before. Raise your hand if you agree with what I just said. Okay, so you are evidencing a greater feeling of capacity now which is bingo, which is the third stitch, which means you, in this disposition, you will attract and evoke from men third stitch or bingo disposition. In the other disposition, you would attract and evoke heady men who are all over the place. Okay? And you could ask any other question or anything you want if there's anything left.
Well, it's a little different. You know, it's not on this. It's that.
Okay, but and as you ask it, hello?
Stay open.
No, not only stay open, ask it from your pelvis.
Okay.
Like actually feel yourself.
Feeling, yeah. I'm just actually feeling that as you, before you said it.
Uh-huh. Thank you for guiding me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, say it from your pelvis.
Okay.
You're not doing it yet. Say it from your pelvis.
I would say.
Okay. I'll let you say it when I can really feel it. Good, so this was the feeling that was underneath the headiness, which is fine, so just let the weather be whatever it is, and if there's anything you want to say or ask, continue from your pelvis. See, now there's happiness and there's sadness. Weather, guys, I'm just trying to make sure that... So, keep speaking. So just notice that me insisting that you speak from your pelvis in a masculine way, like, I'm not letting you out of this, stay with it. Now you can feel I love you, I mean, I'm not trying to hurt you, I'm with you on this, so there's some degree of trust. But it's that masculine pinning you down that allows you to actually open to a deeper place of your own love. So, you know, continue, I welcome it, just stay as pelvic-y as you can.
I think I went into third stage a lot.
Oh.
And like a giant clam.
Well, give me some meat, baby. You know, the clam.
And I also take a lot of judgment for it. And I take a lot of people thinking it's sexuality when it's just living in my truth.
Yeah.
And when I was listening to you tell that girl yesterday, you know, walk with your breasts out, and it's...
Well, I didn't say that. I said the shine love from your breasts.
Shine love.
Yeah.
I just find that it's...
It's dangerous.
It's really dangerous.
That's why you should be able to be so free in it. You could be invisible when you need to be.
It's being invisible that I'm working on. Because when I hear invisible, I hear shut off.
Yeah.
It's like I go to, okay, I'll be the little girl. And
right, right.
I'll just, and it's like.
Just like you heard me say, stick out your breast.
Right.
So just totally relax your lower body open as love, as we were talking yesterday. I mean, if it helps to feel something entering you there, fine. If not, just open there. And as you do so, you become more open, more radiant, more attractive. And as the need to be seen or the need to figure it out relaxes, then you can relax into invisibility. It's the confusion between wanting to be seen and not wanting to be hurt, wanting to be noticed but not wanting to be violated, that creates what you're describing. But when you already feel full, so you don't need a man, you want a man. But when you're actually, your body is full. So I'm going to, for a moment, I'm going to go back and caricaturize you. Does my body feel full to you now? I mean, does it feel like I have a big dildo up my pussy right now? I mean, you know, I mean, you can kind of feel like it. All the energy is up here, and I mean, you're leaning forward, and you're talking like this, and you're, and then all I have to do is say, just talk from your pelvis. In 10 seconds, you're weeping. 2 seconds later, you're laughing. All of that openness was being suppressed by that headiness. To open, to allow that openness to occur, means you already feel full. Only in the full disposition do you attract men of integrity. Full men. The more needy your body is, because you're in your head and not letting energy fill your body, the more needy your man will be that you attract or evoke from your man. In the first stage sense, needy. Needing to jerk off. Needing you to have sex with him and leave you go. Needing to use drugs. Needing to get a buzz somehow. Needing, because that's the disposition of your emptiness when you're empty. But when you relax into your fullness and you're already full, then you turn to a man and your heart might be yearning to be touched by a deep man, but your body is full already of love and energy. Then a man just feels like, wow. A man of integrity. Only a con artist in a first stage sense is going to be attracted to a needy woman because he knows he could hook you because you need it, something. Empty body, need. It's like, here, I could fill you, baby. And it's like, okay. But when you're already full, when you're that full, you will actually be able to scare men away who disturb you. You just look at them and they go, okay. Okay. I mean, women who are really full of energy. Men are terrified of women's emotions. Is there a woman here who doubts that you could reduce a man to a nub emotionally? Right? I mean, you know you can just out-emote your man, don't you? Man, have you ever been emoted to a nub by a woman? Raise your hand. Okay. So, in the energetic domain, in the domain of weather, men are the losers. In the domain of standing in consciousness, men are the winners. That's their gift to you. But in the domain of energy itself, in the force of energy itself, when you allow yourself to be full, you can crush any man by your fullness. A woman once attended my workshop. She was in New York City in Central Park. And a guy came out of the bushes, really big guy with a gun, grabbed her, held the gun to her head, pulled her to the ground and started raping her. Now, this woman had been practicing these kind of spiritual practices for a while, and so she looked into his eyes while this guy's raping her. This is a true story. And she could feel the fear in this man. But his eyes were darting around, and you know he had the gun there, and he couldn't even look into her eyes. And she was just like looking into his eyes and felt the fear, and she just started stroking his face, going, "It's okay. It's okay." And he stopped, and he put down the gun, and he just started crying. And the woman just stood up and just kept with him. You know, it's okay. You know, I love you. And he looked up, and he said, "Nobody in my life had told me they've loved me, ever. Ever. Not his parents, not anyone." And he just stood there and cried, and she stayed with him, and he just said, "You know, this is a dangerous park, let me walk you home." And he actually protected her and walked her, and she came, and she was sitting in a circle like this, and she'd been through several months with this circle. I sometimes teach circles like this for several months in a row, same circle. So everyone knew her, and, you know, that's an extreme story. But the power of feminine love and depth and the strength of your emotional weather can crush any man, weaken any man, or open any man into love. But it needs to be genuinely deep in you. It's your deepest expression. It can't be expressed deep through you if your pelvis is closed and you're in your head. So the only reason I keep emphasizing and using words like cunt, pussy, vagina is to get you to just be there. You know, whatever you want to call that area of your body, to have no charge about it at all, to actually feel, like when the men, I'm talking about, you know, like the consciousness coming out of that part of the body, you need to be alive in that part of your body fully to enter the domain of emotionality and sexuality in full consciousness, full love. So if you want a man of integrity, and you're coming from that place, you could crush any man who's disturbing you, and you could take men who are totally out of integrity. You know, a rapist is an extreme example, but every man here, like the guy who just said that thing, you could imagine being in that mode, and draw him back into love with the depth in your body, the depth of love you feel in your body. If you don't trust that part in you, you will always be a victim. You could crush, you have to feel, not in your head, but literally in this part of your body, that you could just take your vagina and chomp any man's head just right off. And you need to be walking around in that disposition and find out how men bother you or not. They will look in your eyes and go, okay. Only a man who goes, this is what I want, will enter that weather. Can you feel that? We're going to go on now so we don't just stay here, but do you have any sense of that in your body?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And I can tell you, I mean, I always laugh when I'm at the gym and there's a man looking at me across and I could just see them like going, well, I'm going after her, and they get like within 5 feet, and if they're not of depth, they just walk. It's like, it's humorous to watch.
Well, that's why you've been with this one man of depth all of your life, yeah? Maybe one day, perhaps not this weekend, but one day you'll actually live in depth. And you will never be in a relationship that lacks depth again. And I'm talking about any relationship. You will trust your best friends totally. You will trust the man in your life totally. Because you are coming from depth and you will only tolerate depth. Until then, you'll attract what you do. We could take another vote from the men, but I don't think it's necessary. Okay. Would your friends have been okay with that?
Totally.
Can you repeat one sentence that you said to her for remind you what it is?
Well, I don't know. Let's find out.
You said something about when you pick someone that's not trustworthy, something about you're picking your parents' negative issues and they'll kill your heart.
Well, it's just a kind of standard psychological axiom that you fall in love with the negative patterns of your parents.
And you said something, you're choosing a romantic love or something?
Yes, exactly. The person you romantically fall in love with generally carries a lot of the traits that were never resolved with your parents.
So you resolve them with that person?
One would hope so, but usually you just cycle through them until divorce or death. But a second stage therapist would tell you that you evolve through them.
That's if you pick someone that's not trustworthy, you're saying? Not if you...
No.
Anyone?
Let's say... I'm going to expand your question. It's not exactly what you're asking, but I think it's more to what you really want to know. Let's say you and I are married, and you're my wife, I'm your husband, okay? And let's say we have fallen in love, which guarantees that I have the negative patterns in your parents and you have the negative patterns in my parents. Now, if we're in a first stage moment and those negative patterns come up, we just play them out, you know, like, you never give me the love that I want because you didn't. Well, you never love me the way I want it. First stage. Second stage is, I can get the love that I want, and what I need you to do is this. And you actually try to give me the love that I need. So you actually cater to my childhood wounds. That's a second stage form of healing. It's very tedious. I mean, it's not erotic to, you know, like, cater to someone's wounds, but it's not abusive either. In the third stage moment, I still, because it's my pattern, I still live out all your parents' negative patterns, and you feel right through them to my heart. And we just bingo, as I'm living out the negative childhood patterns, as you're living out the negative childhood patterns of my parents, I just bingo with you, open in heart. We make jokes about it. Maybe, what's your, well... My father's name is Howard. So you might just say, oh.
It's true, it's his name.
You might say, hi, Howard, as soon as I start enacting your father's stuff, which I would if you had fallen in love with me. You'd just go, hi, Howard. And we would just both stay in bingo and we'd humorously recognize these patterns are coming. Only, you know, whatever, the Harvel Hendricks level of therapy, the second stage level of therapy, actually tries to resolve those things. To give you a sense of how unresolvable they are, besides the fact that no one's ever resolved them, imagine that your first language was English. Probably for most people in this room it is. I know for a few it's not. But the language you learn as a child, say for the first 15 years of your life, is English. And then you move to France. And now you only speak French. How long would it be until an English speaker could come up to you and speak English and you wouldn't respond in English? Would you ever forget English?
No.
You would never forget it. And it could be evoked like that. Well, that your parents and you establish a pattern of love. It's frozen usually by the time you're two, basically. They don't mean to. They're who they are. You're who you are. And so this pattern gets established in your nervous system and it goes, this pattern feels like home. It could be incredibly abusive, like, you know, I'm sure it wasn't this abusive, but, you know, they could have been like beating you with sticks and that would feel like home. Or it could have just been at a little distance and that's what feels like home. Or whatever it is will feel like home. Now you're at a party and, you know, you meet some guy at the punch bowl and you turn to him and he turns to you and you start talking and your body goes, wow, you seem so familiar to me. Did we know each other? Did we go to high school together? Or, you know, and that familiarity is because you're feeling the home pattern. Now, this guy is going to be as abusive, and I don't mean like physically abusive. If your parents were distant, it's that distance that feels like home. If your parents were angry, it's that anger that feels like home. If your parents were physically abusive, it's his potential for physical abuse that feels like home. So you'll go, oh, home. And you'll go home to your house thinking, he's the one. I've been waiting for that feeling all my life. It feels so familiar, so deep. It must be from a past life. You know, we must be soul people, you know, soul whatever they call them. You know, like, I feel this thing. But all it is your nervous system going, this feels like home. Now, there are people who have recognized that. Many therapists have recognized that. And because they themselves have only achieved the second stage of consciousness, they now realize that that's the pattern. So you talk about that pattern, you learn to form safe containers to talk about that pattern and how to actually try to give it to each other. But the pattern remains there, just like the pattern of the English language. It's your first language of love, of home. You will never forget it. So in the third stage, you simply stop trying to forget English and you speak French. In the third stage, instead of catering to my Howard going na-na-na-na-na, and you reacting to Howard in the first childhood language, you simply speak a new language, the language of bingo, instead of the language of, you never give me the love that I want. Or the second stage language of, look, I feel you doing this pattern now, and I want to make sure that na-na-na-na-na-na. You just bingo right through it. You speak French. You speak a new language of love, the language of love that, for instance, we're learning here, of just total direct connection of heart, right through it all, in the moment, to open each other to God. Wow, I'm Howarding, and you're Howarding, because we both have Howards. So we'll both be, you know, like, Howarding or whatever. And yet, we could bingo in the midst of that. It could be hilarious. It's just like, you know, a little part of us is speaking English, and it's just like, God, look at that, you know. It could be humorous. It could be a total non-obstruction. Or you could turn it into a big deal. You're always doing the Howard. Or you could just stay trapped in it. I hate you. You don't love me, obviously. You know, your choice. First stage relationship to Howard. Second stage relationship to Howard. Let's talk about this. I'm feeling like you're doing this better. Da, da, da. Or third stage relationship to Howard. Just right into the heart. Heart to heart. Total openness. Total service. While we're both Howarding. That's the third stage practice. That's the spiritual practice. That's why the Dalai Lama or Mother Teresa or people who live in the third stage don't talk about wounded child or something. Because when in the third stage, fuck that. I mean, whatever comes up and you love through it. If a leper comes to you, you love through it. If your inner leper comes up, you love through it. If Howard starts talking, you love through it. Only second stage therapists care about the past or care about what's coming up inside of you subjectively. And as long as that pulls your attention, you need second stage therapy. Personally, feeling you right now, I think you don't need much second stage therapy. I think you're ready to open past Howard into the heart. So when you're with the man who will inevitably be Howarding with you in some way, just open and bingo with them, and hopefully they'll open and bingo with you through, you know, they'll only choose you if you match what they're most hate, basically. And then you just bingo through that. And that's, again, why I set up these circumstances that feel so horrible, because if they didn't, you'd have nothing to practice through.
So the person does not have, you said they will crush your heart if you're not in the third stage doing that. If you're in the third stage, the person...
It's humorous. They're just a mechanical feature of your parents. It's pretty funny enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, this will be the last question, then we'll take a break.
Well, I'm here in the workshop with my intimate partner, and well, I think we both left feeling, I left feeling open and high, and I got the same feeling from him. Ethan said it. Couldn't wait to get home so he could fuck me open to God.
Oh, go ahead.
I mean, he wanted to fuck me open. I wanted to.
I believe it.
And that's not what happened.
Right. So that's great. So what happened, and I'll be able to give you two a specific practice that deals with whatever pattern happened to come up.
Well, I don't know. That's kind of why I'm asking.
Well, do you know what didn't happen?
Well, nobody came, which is not the point necessarily.
No, not at all.
No, but it wasn't like the timing wasn't right, or it's like I felt that we had to do it immediately because we just were in this space and we needed to exhaust something, we needed to practice something or do something.
Well, were you in bingo while you were making love?
We were when we went in, and then it
Right, so that's what happened. Whatever you guys were doing, and it doesn't exactly matter the mechanics yet, you need to be able to maintain the bingo through it for it to be third stage sex. So whatever the way to proceed from here, for instance, is let's say you go home tonight, and a similar thing, you both feel very open and you begin having sex. The moment one of you feels less than bingo, you could say something like, let's have a secret word, raspberry. So when either of you say raspberry, what it means is, I need a deeper bingo with you. So you stop doing whatever you're doing, and you do all the practices you could remember. You know, you gaze into each other's eyes, you feel each other's hearts, you open each other, he breathes from his belly, he feels into you, you open your vagina and your heart to him, you give him the light of your heart, all the things we've been practicing. And then when you guys feel that bingo happening, you could say bingo and continue making love. And then you feel the bingo disappear, say raspberry. Go back, you know, just stop what you're doing in the moment, whatever it is, and just reestablish the bingo. Does this make sense to you or not?
It does. I have a question. But
okay, what's your question?
My question is, isn't there a time where it's just not right? Just don't do it? Like,
stop, don't do what?
Stop having sex.
Yeah, whenever it's not bingo, stop having sex.
But what if I can't respond to raspberry, or he can't respond to raspberry?
Then you stay there and you practice till you fall asleep to open to bingo.
What if you have to be somewhere?
Well, then you go and be somewhere and practice there being bingo.
Okay.
I mean, bingo is a continuous practice, and if you could do it for 5 minutes a day, it's better than most people on earth. I mean, if you talk to, I don't know, a Tibetan monk or someone who's dedicated their life since like 2 years old to these kind of practices, by the time they're in their 60s of practicing 24 hours a day, if they could maintain what we're calling bingo half of the day, they're considered highly evolved masters. Most monks, I mean, these are practices. They take their lifetime practices of opening. So start where you are now, and I mean, if you guys want to have sex in non-bingo moments, that's fine too. Sometimes that's great, but bingo as much as you can, and realize there'll be very few moments where you're actually able to, because you're just a beginner, really. Most Tibetan monks who've practiced for, or any, you know, Christian monks, whatever, who've practiced for 50 years feel like they're just beginners. If you ask the Dalai Lama, he'd tell you he's a beginner. And he's been reincarnated 17 times or whatever. I mean, we're talking about long-term ways of life that unfold your deepest gift. It's an ongoing unfoldment.
What about when it brings up serious questions? I mean, not just this. I mean, there were other things that happened in the evening. We went out to dinner with friends. There was a relationship. I have a relationship with a man that makes my intimate partner feel uncomfortable.
Sorry.
And that became really, really clear. And we could feel each other. Like, he gave me a 2, I think.
Right.
He felt like he became invisible.
Right.
After we just did all this opening work. So it kind of continued throughout the night, and then...
Great, so you now are sensitized to ways of that you don't stay connected to each other's hearts.
Right, and what it makes me want to do is leave. So, not entirely, but it makes me say, well, question the whole thing.
Right.
I guess what I'm asking is, how do I handle this in the third stage? Do I, when I feel like I can't bingo, and I feel like I need to...
You realize that is the third stage, to stay right where you can't bingo for the rest of your life. Live just beyond your capacity to bingo for the rest of your life, and that would be the most rapid way for you to open your heart. You might not be ready for the most rapid way, but if you wanted to, you would actually put your life in the position that it was just a little too much to bingo in and stay there, whatever that meant. So for you guys, that sounds relatively easy. Just go out to dinner. So what you do is you go out to dinner, and you continue practicing bingo with your partner all through dinner. Now, you don't have to keep looking into each other's eyes, but you have to have enough connection. So even when you're talking to someone else, maybe you would occasionally make eye contact to show that you're still feeling him. But you just practice that bingo continually through dinner. Now, again, if you manage it for 5 minutes, you're doing great. So you just keep practicing bingo through dinner. And if you could maintain bingo with him, with another couple, through all of dinner for an hour, you're probably better than anyone else in this room. Probably better than most people I've ever met in my life.
And the relationship that we have with the other people at the table are relevant?
Well, again, that depends. It's kind of like, am I talking to someone who's learning what a nine iron is, or am I talking to Tiger Woods? Eventually, you practice what I just described with everyone constantly. So right now, I'm feeling her drinking water, I'm feeling her itching herself, he's just scratched himself, now he's thinking, you know, I'm feeling everybody in this room constantly. So while I'm speaking with you, I'm actually modulating what I'm saying to open everyone the most. Now, I've been practicing this as long as Tiger Woods has been practicing golf, and you're picking up the putter asking me questions, and so that's fine. Tiger Woods at one point just picked up a putter and like missed. You know, you got to start where you start, and then with practice you get better and better and better. So start with one person, and in a week or two you'll probably be able to get through most of dinner with him feeling you're like, say, seven or above with him, even though you're talking to other people, and then maybe include them into it. So try to keep everyone open, you know, stay in bingo with the whole dinner table constantly, no matter who you're looking at or talking to. Do that for several months, then expand it. I'm at my bingo edge now. I'm about to decide whether to tell you something or not.
Go for it.
Thank you for the support. Recently, I taught a workshop, and the group got to a place just that you're describing where they were given an assignment to go to a dance club and open the entire club into bingo. That was their assignment. Now, they were further along than all of us are now. I mean, clearly, I mean, the two of you were just describing how difficult it was, just the two of you at dinner. So they were assigned to go and to begin dancing with each other, and there were safety things, so the men were always looking for the women, looking out for the women. So if any stranger walked up, the woman would just make a sign, and the man would come and, you know, say, she's with me. And so there were all kinds of safety things in place. But they were to open the entire club in bingo by the way they danced with each other, and then whenever any individual chose, they would turn and dance with somebody in the club and open them in bingo through dance. They had come to the point in their own practice where they learned to open other people through dance into bingo, through eye contact, through moving their body. And so they did it. And they came back the next day and they talked about how the whole place lit up, essentially. And their experience of how ecstatic that was to open up this whole place. So eventually, you'll be the Tiger Woods of bingoing at dinner. I don't know if Tiger Woods is a good example. Do you know who he is? Golfer? He's an athlete. So you'll be a You'll be able to walk into a restaurant, stay connected with him at 7, 8, 9, 10, Stay connected with your table, 7, 8, 9, 10. But just the way you turn to the waiter or waitress will open them in bingo. And the way you walk in, remember the women were saying that the way big shirt white guy walked up to the front, you know, was like they felt his confidence. You could open the restaurant in bingo just from the way you walk eventually. Now you're asking the questions kind of like, you started going like, I have a question. Now, it's going to be pretty hard for people to be bingo in this, you know. So that the more that your body could open and your heart is speaking, the more the room will open in bingo. And the more then he's in bingo with you, the more the two of you will, you know, because it's a multiplicity thing, the two of you will open the restaurant in the bingo. Maybe the two of you will become the saints of Los Angeles. And you'll go from restaurant to restaurant, opening everyone in bingo. Maybe that will become your expertise. Maybe that's your gift. So like he walks in and like orders wine. And the way he orders wine, you know, everyone goes, oh, just the way he like holds the wine bottle. You know, it's like, ah. Oh. And then, you know, you say hello and they, ho, oh, ho, ho. So the whole place is just shivering. You know, there they are, you know. As you walk in. Oh, but at this point, you know, if you two could maintain bingo for a little bit during dinner, that's a good place to start.
Can you find a sponsor for that?
Sponsors will come out of the woodwork. Can you feel yourself more open now?
Yes.
Okay, wait. Raise your hand if you feel her more radiant now than she was. Okay. You are, whatever difference is between now and 15 minutes ago, you're radiating light into this room. You're actually enlightening this room. You're losing a little now because we're talking about it, you're not used to it. But that openness is a gift to this entire room. It's a constant gift, or you're withholding the gift. And poor guy who's with you, all those moments of withhold are going to make him withhold because he doesn't know how to practice until yesterday. So like he's used to being with this woman who's like, so he's probably going back. And you're going, how come you're only, well, how come you're only, well, how come you're only, well, just one of you, damn it, stop it. Open into bingo and open each other into bingo. And when you're pretty good at that stably, which takes days, weeks, years, I don't know what it'll take. It could take moments. Then I start opening everyone else in bingo one at a time. And then you walk around feeling everybody. Does that work for you? Any other questions about that?
I sure have
it. No, it's okay. Let's finish this. Is there something left?
I'm sorry, what you just said about one of us opening to bingo, he's always opening, always coming to me, let's breathe, let's...
Oh, that doesn't mean he's in bingo. I mean, a beagle could come to you and do both. Come to think of it.
maybe he's trying to overcompensate for something by doing that, and I'm not feeling, I don't know. But
hey, if it's not opening you into bingo, it's not working. What did you just say?
It's not me, then. It's not because I feel guilty that I'm not able to be in bingo.
Well, I'm sure you're contributing your own closure to it, but that's just up to the ante of his art. It's like Tiger Woods, you know, the wind's blowing, you're in the rough, you know, that's how you are. You know, you're like, the trees are around you, and he's trying to hit this thing, or I don't know what analogy would work for you, but I mean, there's tough situations. So you're tough situations sometimes, you're closed down. If he's going to practice, he has to be able to walk into the rough and go, okay. He's walking up to her. Looks like he's going for the chip. The crowd is watching. You know, and you're there. And he just finds his way, boom, and you go, wah. Okay? Just like you just did.
I feel desperate.
Well, that's because I've golfed for a while. But your man can golf for a while, too. That's the practice for the two of you, to do that with each other. So you use each other's closures as opportunities to practice serving each other and everyone. Yeah, that's what an artist does. That's what the Dalai Lama does. That's what Mother Teresa did. That's what one does when you realize you're here to live as love, as consciousness. That you're only happy when you're giving that. Then your life becomes a gift to everybody. And until then, you suffer your own closure as if you're living for yourself, which never ends up feeling wide open. Only living for the sake of all beings is to live wide open.
For more information about books, tapes, or workshops with David Dada, call toll-free 1-888-MAN-WOMAN. That's 1-888-MAN-WOMAN. 626-9662. Book, tape, and workshop information can also be found on the web at www.deida.com. That's www.deida.com. Or you can write to us at Plexus, PMB 445, 815-A, Brazos, Austin, Texas, 78701.